All right, so let's just check the date real quick. It is February 2026.
Right.
And imagine you have been saving up for months. You know, maybe you skipped the fancy coffees, maybe you picked up some freelance work on the weekends.
You've been putting in the work.
Exactly. And you are finally ready to retire that old rig and build something new. You walk into the electronics store, head held high, credit card ready.
A great feeling.
Yeah. And you ask the clerk for the latest high-end graphics card. And instead of grabbing a box from the shelf, he just gives you this tired, hollow look and says, "Sorry, we don't make those for gamers anymore."
Man, it really feels like the opening scene of a cyberpunk novel, doesn't it?
It does.
Like this dystopian hardware shortage. But looking at this stack of reports we have on the desk today, specifically this deep dive into what the sources are calling the Silicon Rebellion, this isn't fiction.
No, it's not.
This is the absolute reality of the market right now.
And that is exactly what we are unpacking today, the Silicon Rebellion. Because the headline news that dropped this week is frankly just jarring. NVIDIA, the company that practically invented the modern concept of PC gaming, has dropped an absolute bombshell.
Yeah, a massive one.
For the first time in its 30-year history, there will be zero new gaming GPUs released in 2026.
None. It's a complete freeze.
Right.
The RTX 50 Super Series, canceled.
Wow.
The RTX 60 Series, pushed out to 2028. And honestly, reading through the source material, even that 2028 date looks overly optimistic.
It's wild. I mean, for a lot of people, myself included, NVIDIA basically is PC gaming. It feels like a betrayal to the
I
consumer.
get that.
But as I was reading through the breakdown of the supply chain and the financials in our sources today, it became pretty clear that this isn't just a company being, mean to gamers.
Right, it's not personal.
No, it's this massive, complex collision of economics, manufacturing bottlenecks, and the whole AI explosion.
Precisely. It is the perfect storm. And
Right.
the irony of it is actually quite painful.
How
While the
so?
very technology that was supposed to revolutionize gaming, artificial intelligence,
Oh.
is physically displacing the hardware needed to play the games.
Oh, right.
It's this paradox where the silicon itself, or rather the market for it, is deciding who is worthy of computational power. And looking at the hard data, the verdict is in.
And it's not the consumer.
Exactly. Right now, it is not the consumer.
Okay, so let's get into the actual mechanics of this, because I think a lot of people assume these massive tech companies just have infinite factories, right?
Yeah, that's a common misconception.
On the surface, it seems crazy to abandon the market that made you a household name. Gaming was their bread and butter. Why walk away now?
If you look at the spreadsheet, the answer is brutally simple.
It's the margins.
It's always the margins.
Yeah.
Capital flows to where it multiplies. The sources break down the operating margins for us really clearly.
Right.
When they sell a chip to a gamer, like an enthusiast buying an RTX card, they're making about a 40% margin.
Which, to be fair, is a really healthy business. I mean, most hardware companies would kill for 40%.
Oh, in a vacuum, absolutely.
Yeah.
But you have to compare that to the alternative. Selling a chip to a data center for AI training, that yields a 65% operating margin.
Wow. Okay, so a huge jump.
Yeah, but the margin is only half the story here.
Okay.
The real killer, the thing that makes this a total Sophie's choice for the manufacturer, is the raw price tag and the opportunity cost.
Right. I saw the price delta in the notes, and it is staggering. I mean, we are so used to complaining about a $2,000 RTX 5090. That feels incredibly expensive to us.
Because it is expensive for a consumer product.
Yeah.
But the H100 or the new H200 data center chips, those are selling for upwards of $30,000 per unit.
30,000.
Yes. And here is where the engineering reality really crashes into the business reality. Those two products are fighting for the exact same fundamental
This is
resources.
what the report calls the DRAM crisis, right? And the packaging bottleneck. Because I think this is where people get confused. We usually think of VRAM on a graphics card and the memory in a giant server as entirely different product lines. Like, I don't know, Ford making a small sedan versus a massive commercial truck.
That's a good analogy for how we used to think about it.
But you're saying they are effectively eating from the exact same plate.
They are. And it's not just the raw silicon wafers either, though that is a part of it. The real issue is the advanced packaging.
Okay, break that down for us.
Specifically, it's something called CoWoS-SiP on wafer on substrate. It's a major bottleneck at the manufacturing giant TSMC.
Right, the Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company.
Exactly. Both the high-end H100 AI chips and the high-end consumer GPUs require this very specific, incredibly high-tech packaging process to basically bond the memory to the processor.
And there are only so many of these packaging machines in existence.
That's the bottleneck. And building more of them isn't a quick fix.
Right, you can't just order one on Amazon.
No. The source notes that building a new fabrication plant with these specific capabilities takes about 3 years.
3 years?
And $10 billion.
Oh, wow.
So there is a hard cap on global capacity right now. Companies like Samsung and SK Hynix physically cannot produce the HBM3 and GDDR7 memory fast enough.
So every single time NVIDIA decides to put a consumer GPU through that specific packaging line, they're effectively choosing not to make a data center chip.
Exactly. It's a zero-sum game on the assembly line.
So if I'm the CEO, I'm looking at a slot on the assembly line. I can fill it with a product that I'm going to sell for $2,000.
Right.
Or I can fill it with a product that sells for $30,000.
And you have Microsoft and Meta and OpenAI basically standing outside your door with dump trucks full of cash, begging for that $30,000 version.
Yeah, the financial answer is unambiguous. You prioritize the enterprise.
It's ruthless logic. And the revenue shift in the source material confirms they've already made this choice.
All right, I was looking at the historical data in the deep dive. Gaming used to be 80% of their revenue. 80%. Okay. That was the company's entire identity. But in Q4 of 2025, it dropped to just 11.45%.
While data centers hit 64.44%.
That is just a complete metamorphosis.
It really is. They aren't a gaming company anymore.
No.
They are an AI infrastructure company that just happens to have a legacy gaming division attached to it. They didn't just leave the market. They migrated to an entirely new continent where the streets are paved with enterprise contracts.
Okay, so that perfectly explains why I can't buy a card. The hardware drought is very real and very mathematically sound.
Unfortunately, yes.
But this deep dive goes further than just the physical hardware. It looks at the software side, too.
Yeah.
The people actually making the games we want to play. And we have this really dark report from the 2026 Game Developers Conference, GDC.
Right. They refer to it as the GDC paradox.
Yeah. Because you would think developers would be happy about AI, right? Efficiency, faster workflows. But the vibe in this survey is so tense.
Very tense.
The survey says 68% of studios are currently using AI. So adoption is really high. But 52% of developers believe it is actively harming the industry. And that number was only 18% back in 2024.
That sentiment shift is massive. And it tells you that the reality of using these tools in the trenches hasn't matched the executive marketing hype.
Right.
Or rather, the marketing hype was, this will help you. And the reality on the ground is, this will replace you.
The source actually calls it the training your replacement problem. There is this one anecdote from an environment artist in the report that really stuck with me.
Yeah, the texture artist.
Right. They spent 15 years mastering texture work, like knowing exactly how light hits a rough stone wall, that kind of granular detail. And now a stable diffusion model can generate it in 10 seconds.
And the really terrifying part for that artist is that the quality is considered good enough for the executives. That's the key.
Yeah.
The artist said the ultimatum from upper management was completely explicit. They said, learn to work with AI or make way.
That is brutal.
It's not being treated as an assistance tool.
Yeah.
It's a displacement tool. The source highlights that 67% of artists and 58% of designers fear redundancy right now.
But here is where it gets really interesting to me, looking at the breakdown. Even the programmers are turning against it.
Yes.
Because back in 2024, coders were the biggest cheerleaders for AI. It was all, it writes the boilerplate code for me. This is great. But now, positive sentiment among programmers dropped from 62% down to 41%. Why the sudden sour mood there?
Well, this brings us to one of the most important concepts in this entire deep dive. They call it AI debt.
AI debt. I love this term. It sounds a lot like technical debt, but somehow worse.
It's exactly that, but on a human capital level. Think about how a junior developer actually learns their craft.
Right.
They write simple, sometimes pretty bad code. They break things. Then a senior developer reviews it, corrects them, explains why it's wrong, and the junior learns the underlying architecture. That is the fundamental cycle of skill acquisition.
Right, that makes sense. But now the studio just uses an AI model to write all that basic code because it's cheaper and faster than hiring a junior dev.
Exactly. So you just stop hiring juniors entirely.
Oh.
You get this immediate burst of efficiency. The balance sheet looks amazing for three quarters. But the architect's analysis in the report warns that you are actively creating a hollow senior problem.
A hollow senior problem.
Yes. Because in 5 or 10 years, who becomes your senior art director or your lead architect?
Nobody.
Right. You have an entire generation of people who never learned the fundamentals because an AI did the foundational work for them.
So when the AI inevitably hallucinates or creates a block of code that has a subtle, deep-level security flaw, nobody on the team actually has the foundational knowledge to spot it or fix it.
Exactly. You lose the actual capacity for innovation. You're just rearranging old patterns that the AI fed you. It's hollowing out the industry's talent pool from the inside out just to save a few dollars today.
That is terrifying for the long-term quality of games. But, I mean, at least the massive studios, the EAs, the Microsofts, they have the cash reserves to figure this out, or at least survive the messy transition.
Sure.
The group that I'm really worried about looking at this data is the indies.
Oh, the collateral damage there is just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And this ties directly back to the hardware shortage we started with.
Right.
If you are a massive corporation, you have dedicated server farms, you have long-term enterprise contracts with NVIDIA. But imagine you're a 5-person indie studio in Poland or Brazil or Iran.
Right. They need high-performance GPUs to develop a modern game in something like Unreal Engine 5. You can't run that on a basic laptop.
Right.
But they can't buy the physical cards because NVIDIA isn't selling them to consumers anymore.
And this is where the report talks about the reverse economics of scale.
Okay, explain that.
Usually, as technology matures, it gets cheaper and more accessible.
Right. Smartphones, TVs.
Exactly. But here, it's doing the opposite. It's getting exclusive. Since these indie devs can't buy the hardware outright, they are forced to rent computational power via the cloud. But look at the costs detailed in the report.
Yeah, I have it right here. $5 to $10 an hour for a GPU-capable instance.
It sounds small at first, right? Like the price of a cup of coffee.
Sure.
But do the math on that. A small team working full-time, needing multiple machines, that comes out to roughly $1,200 to $2,400 a month.
Wow.
That is a serious monthly rent payment, purely for the privilege of turning on a computer capable of game development.
That's just a brutal burn rate for an indie team that might not see a single dollar of profit for 2 or 3 years while they build the game. That kills the project before they even write the first line of code.
And it gets worse, because it's not even a flat rate.
What do you mean?
The pricing is dynamic. It's like surge pricing on a rideshare app. These small studios are actively bidding for server time against companies like Microsoft and Meta.
Oh, man.
So when a massive new AI model is being trained, the market price for that compute power spikes.
Yeah.
And the indie dev in Poland is just trying to render a level, and they are literally getting outbid by a trillion-dollar corporation trading a chatbot.
It just prices them out of existence entirely. It creates this massive digital divide where only the extraordinarily wealthy can even afford to create art in this medium.
Exactly.
And speaking of divides, the sources get into another huge factor here. We have to talk about the geopolitical angle.
Right, the chip war.
Yeah, because this isn't just about massive companies fighting each other. It's about countries.
Yeah.
The reports dive into how international trade policy is actively shaping what's on the shelf at your local electronics store.
It is a massive factor.
Yeah.
The source material points specifically to the U.S. export restrictions on China as a primary driver here. The U.S. government essentially prohibits companies like NVIDIA from selling their absolute top-tier cutting-edge AI chips like the H100s to China.
Right. And reading that, my first thought was actually, wouldn't that mean more chips for the rest of us? Like, if they can't sell them to that massive market in China, shouldn't those chips be piling up in warehouses here in the U.S. or in Europe?
You would logically think so, but the global market reacts very differently.
Wait, so?
Because NVIDIA can't sell its super high-end, incredibly profitable enterprise stuff to a huge market like China, they have to maximize the revenue from every single silicon wafer they are legally allowed to use elsewhere.
Oh, I see.
They aren't going to waste their limited precious manufacturing capacity at TSMC on low-margin gaming cards for the U.S. or Europe.
Right.
They are going to focus entirely on producing the absolute highest-margin AI chips they are legally allowed to sell in the markets that are still open to them.
So the regular gamer in Ohio or Berlin is basically just collateral damage in a macro-level trade war between Washington and Beijing.
Exactly. The report details how the supply gets squeezed at both ends, The regulation restricts the global flow of the product, and then the corporation maximizes its profit margins within those new restrictions.
And the consumer is just left out in the cold.
Left completely out. We are impartially just looking at the market mechanics, the sources outlined, and the result is the consumer gets nothing.
Right. So let's look forward. Let's look at the horizon. We have zero hardware to buy. Indie developers are going broke just trying to rent server time. And the big AAA studios are essentially running on this toxic AI debt. The source material paints a pretty bleak picture of where this all goes. Specifically, they focus on this concept of the cloud monopoly.
This really is the end game of the hardware shortage. Mm-hmm. If you cannot physically own the hardware, you must rent it, period.
Right.
And who owns the rental infrastructure?
The big three: Microsoft Azure, Amazon AWS, and Google Cloud.
Exactly. It concentrates an absolutely immense amount of power into very few hands. The report actually outlines three specific scenarios for the year 2030, and honestly, none of them look anything like the PC gaming world we all grew up with.
Let's walk through those scenarios for the listeners. So scenario one is called hardware returns, but...
Right. Scenario one, they assign this roughly a 30% probability. Hardware actually comes back to consumer shelves, but it is entirely AI first.
Okay.
The architecture of the chips is designed completely around tensor processing and AI tasks. Gaming is just a derivative afterthought.
So you're basically gaming on a scientific calculator.
That's a great way to put it. It works, it'll run the game, but it's not optimized for graphics or fun. It's purely utilitarian.
Okay, what about scenario two?
Scenario two is the complete cloud era. The analysts give this a 50% chance, making it the most likely outcome according to the data.
Okay.
In this timeline, no one buys GPUs anymore. The entire concept of a personal gaming PC essentially dies out. Everyone just streams their games via services like GeForce Now or Xbox Cloud.
Wow. So this is the whole you will own nothing and be happy scenario. You don't own the rig. You don't even own the game files on a hard drive. You just have a monthly subscription.
Exactly. And the danger there is if you stop paying your subscription, or if the corporation decides your specific region isn't profitable enough to support anymore, or if they decide to censor a game you love.
You have zero recourse.
None. You are purely a tenant in their digital ecosystem. They can evict you at any time.
Man. Okay. That brings us to scenario three, the consumer rebellion. And they give this one a 20% chance.
Yeah, this is definitely the romantic option. It envisions a massive right to repair style movement, but for high performance computing.
Right.
People turning to Linux, championing open source hardware, maybe relying entirely on AMD or Intel to save the consumer market, assuming those companies can even survive the DRAM memory crisis themselves.
Right. I actually saw the mention of the Save PC Gaming hashtag movement in the notes. 500,000 signatures on a petition. But honestly, looking at the brutal economics we just spent the last 15 minutes discussing, does a consumer petition really matter at this point?
The source material is pretty cynical about it.
Yeah.
And honest, looking at the numbers, I have to agree with their assessment.
Yeah.
They quote this industry insider, the architect, saying that consumer petitions rarely, if ever, change the minds of corporations that are chasing infinite enterprise margins.
Right.
When the boardroom choice is between a disgruntled gamer with $500 to spend and an OpenAI server contract worth billions of dollars.
Yeah.
The corporation is going to choose the server contract every single time.
It really feels like the era of the hobbyist, you know, the person who bought components, built their own machine, tweaked the BIOS, truly owned their hardware. That era is just ending. We are moving from being owners to just being users.
It's a fundamental shift in agency. For decades, computing power was treated almost like a utility that just continually got cheaper, faster, and more democratic. But now, it is reverting to a luxury commodity. It is literally becoming the new oil.
The new oil.
And just like oil, whoever controls the supply controls the world. We are watching the average person actively being pushed out of the driver's seat.
It really reframes the whole industry for me. It's not just about complaining about frame rates or ray tracing or graphics settings anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about the centralization of power.
Exactly. If you control the compute, you control the innovation.
Right.
If indie developers can't afford the compute power, they can't innovate. And we just end up with a monoculture dictated entirely by the three massive companies that can actually afford to keep the server lights on.
That is a really heavy realization. It definitely makes you look at that monthly cloud subscription fee a little differently.
It should. We are actively trading our ownership for convenience.
Yeah.
But the long-term price of that convenience is complete dependency.
Well, we are just about out of time for today, but I want to leave everyone with the final provocation from our source material.
Yeah, this is a good one.
It's the question that really kept me up last night after reading the brief. As we move rapidly toward a world where we own nothing and rent everything from our music to our movies, and now, apparently, our very processing power, are we willing to sacrifice our fundamental freedom for that convenience?
And if computational power really is the new oil, what happens to the people who are left with empty tanks?
Something to chew on while you check your bank balance. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the Silicon Rebellion. We will catch you on the next one.